The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hey there, welcome to The Undercurrent. I'm Tara Sloan. So nice to be with you. On this episode, I am so happy to introduce you to someone who is not only a dear, dear friend of mine, but who is an absolute trailblazer in the world of hockey. Christine Simpson did her first NHL broadcast in 1998. This is at a time when women were all but non-existent in that arena, no pun intended. She instantly made her mark, becoming a staple on Hockey Night in Canada for years and years. And now, almost 30 years later, Chris is still on the air doing feature interviews for Amazon Prime's Monday night show in Canada. She remains one of the most trusted and competent voices in the game. Ask anyone. It's not just because I love her. Chris and I became friends when I first started doing the show Hometown Hockey in 2014. She has been in my corner ever since, as I am in hers. Here's my chat with the legendary Christine Simpson. Okay, Chris, so let's start with how you ended up here. And I've given this disclosure. You and I are very close friends. Yes. But you know, if I can take a step back for a second, you know, I've been at hockey games with you. I've been in restaurants with you. You are a known quantity in hockey. People love you. So how did you get to this place?
Well, I've been around for a while. Let's start with that. Where do we begin?
Well, let's start in London. Start with. I mean, you grew up around hockey.
I did. And honestly, I do feel that if I didn't grow up in London, Ontario, the middle sister between two hockey playing brothers, I really don't think I would be here in this position. I guess it really all began by being a bit of a rink rat where my brothers both played, and it was cheaper than getting a babysitter. I would just be taken to whatever rink in southwestern Ontario that my brothers were playing in. But it was there that I wasn't forced to go. I really enjoyed it. I loved watching it. It's kind of where I really feel like I first grew to love the game, in part because I was there supporting my brothers, but in part because it was just a really cool, fun game that not only my brothers, but, you know, all of my friends, all of my guy friends. Because again, women's hockey, girls' hockey wasn't really a thing back then, or else, because a lot of people do ask, well, growing up in a hockey family, didn't you play? And it just never even dawned on me as much as I played every other sport. Playing hockey just kind of wasn't an option for me. So first and foremost, I'm so glad that it is for so many young girls and women now. But yeah, so it began with that. Both brothers went on playing professionally. My brother Dave was captain of the London Knights junior team, drafted by the New York Islanders, played in their farm system for a few years, and then realized, okay, I've gotten what I want out of hockey. But my younger brother, Craig, drafted by the Pittsburgh Penguins and then traded to the Edmonton Oilers, where he won two Stanley Cups. So my first go round with the Stanley Cup was literally just there as a family member getting to sip champagne out of it, as one does.
Wow.
When your brother wins it, you get to party with it. So that, again, took me around the game in a whole different way. But professionally, I would say the first time my professional world collided with my hockey world was when I was hired as the marketing manager of the Hockey Hall of Fame. And so all of a sudden, I am dealing with all of the honored members every year, the new inductees and their families. I'm dealing with every member of the media who would come to cover the Hall of Fame. And I was dealing with, you know, all of the NHL teams. When the Hall of Fame opened in downtown Toronto in 1993, I remember we wanted to invite every NHL team. When you're in Toronto, come over and we'll give you a tour of this brand new spanking new Hall of Fame. And got to meet, I still have players who say, I remember you giving me my first tour of the Hall way back when. But while I was there, part of my job, I also was the media spokesperson. So especially in that first year, it's a brand new Hall of Fame. We would have media outlets from all over North America, all over the world, you know, from CBC in Canada to Good Morning America to NHK in Japan, doing stories on the hall. And I would be the one who would walk them through the hall, give them the history of the game and tell them all about the Hall of Fame and the trophies and all of that. And I would often have producers say, gosh, you know, you really seem to know your hockey and you seem comfortable in front of a camera. Is you know, television something that you'd ever thought of doing? And of course, no, I never studied broadcasting. I couldn't do that. But lo and behold.
But like, I mean, let's go back to that time. I mean, it's not like you didn't think it's an option because you're not good at it. You don't think it's an option because you're not seeing anybody who looks like you do it.
Exactly that. You know, again, being in a hockey family, every Saturday night, our family was tuned into Hockey Night in Canada. But yeah, that was the boys' club. You know, there weren't women on that broadcast that would ever make me think, oh, that's something that I could aspire to do. So it just never even seemed to be an option. And as I both you and I know now, you really do need to see it to be it. And yeah. I'm just so glad that for you, for me, for other women who now young women can say, yeah, I grew up watching you do that, which is why I, from a young age, decided that's what I wanted to do. So I didn't have that role model to look up to. But my God, I mean, I do kind of call myself the accidental journalist. It's just like all of these paths that seem to be going in various and different ways led me to where I truly believe I was meant to be. And everything I had done up until that point helped me in some way, shape, or form in doing my job as a hockey broadcaster, even though that wasn't exactly the plan.
Well, what was the plan? What were you going to be when you grew up, Chris?
When I grew up, well, I'm sure as all of us, you go through different, like, I mean, when I was a little girl, I thought being a flight attendant would be pretty cool. Little did I know I would be on planes for a good portion of my adult life, but sitting in a seat, not, serving drinks and looking after passengers. But yeah, I mean, I went to Western University in London, kind of did social science, got into marketing, PR. I worked for Roots, the Canadian clothing store, doing PR for them. I worked at IMG, a sports marketing agency. So, you know, marketing kind of was the way that I thought my career was going to go. But even then, like, I ended up working on the Toronto Olympic bid way back when Toronto was bidding for the 96 games that Atlanta ended up winning. But even then, like, it was starting to be, oh yeah, the sports world is kind of a neat thing. So maybe there is something. Even when I was at Roots, you know, I was doing marketing for a clothing company, but they became a Major League Baseball licensee when the All-Star Game was happening in Toronto. They became a CFL licensee when John Candy and Wayne Gretzky and Bruce McNall bought the Toronto Argonauts because they wanted to be a part of that. And when the Canada Cup was here in 1990, 1991,
yeah,
they got licensed for that. So all of a sudden, my job was tended to be colliding in the sports world, which again is why I say I just feel so fortunate that that path led me to where I am.
Okay, but let's talk about how you actually, I mean, there's a step in between. So you end up as the first in-arena host at Maple Leaf Gardens for the Toronto Maple Leafs. How did that happen? So what were the steps kind of in between here?
So I was working at the Hockey Hall of Fame. So I'd started in the fall of 92. And so, you know, we started to work closely with the Leafs because, of course, they're the NHL team that's in the city. And it's funny, at the time, Bob Stelic was the head of marketing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So dealt with him a little bit at the Leafs. And he will tell the story that anytime you would call the Hockey Hall of Fame, you'd get the switchboard and it would be my voice on the recorded message saying, "You have reached the Hockey Hall of Fame. We are located at 30 Yonge Street in downtown Toronto. We're open 7 days a week. If you would like to speak to so-and-so." Little did I know, Bob decided, this would have been leading into the season, 1995 season, he decided he needed to kind of up the in-game entertainment at a Leafs game. And by up, I mean, say, create in-game entertainment.
Right.
There really wasn't a whole lot of that going on. And I think a big part of it was that was the same year that the Toronto Raptors came to town. Mm. And he would realize that, boy, in the NBA, they jazz it up. Like, they are entertaining their fans at all times, even when the play is going on down on the court. So I'll never forget Bob reaching out to me. Actually, we were at a Blue Jays game with some of my Hall of Fame colleagues. And he said, "Yeah, you know, this fall I'm thinking of finding someone to be our in-arena host." And I'm like, "Well, what's that?" I mean, now every team has
right.
one. But back then, it really wasn't a thing. And he said, "Well, you know, I just think that our sponsors and our advertisers are looking for more, you know, more impact during the game. So this person would be in the stands doing contests, on the ice during intermissions." So, of course, I think he's asking me as the marketing manager what I think. And I'm like, "Bob, that's a great idea. I think your advertisers and, you know, your sponsors are going to like that you're elevating their association with you." And he ends the conversation by saying, "Great. Well, I want you to be my in-arena host." And again, I'm like, "What would ever make you think that I could do that?" And he said, "Well, you got a great voice. You're comfortable around the game. Want to give it a shot?" Sure. Why not? What have I got to lose? So it wasn't exactly hard-hitting journalism, but for three seasons, yeah, from 95, 96, 97, I worked at the Hall of Fame all day. I would take the subway up to Maple Leaf Gardens and worked every Leafs home game night, doing the contests in the stands. And, you know, I was up in the press box when I wasn't out, you know, in the arena or on the ice doing my gig. So I also got a better idea of the media in the press box, like what they do, what their gigs are like, and certainly got to know all of the media. It was helpful for me, too, with my job at the Hall of Fame, because I could then often get messages to the media like, "Hey, you might want to do a story on what we're doing at the Hockey Hall of Fame,
right,
because one of your alumni is going, you know, going to be inducted this fall." So my worlds really collided there. And so for the first time, I guess I got comfortable with a microphone in my hand in front of a live audience then of 18,000 people. And then lo and behold, in 1998, a new sports network was launching in Canada to rival TSN that, of course, had been around for a long time. And I remember putting a VHS tape together of basically me being interviewed by then, you know, by so many different outlets who had come to the Hall of Fame, or sometimes when I would travel with the Stanley Cup, I'd get interviewed about that. And I cobbled together this tape, and luckily Scott Moore at the time, who was at the helm, saw something in me, as raw as I was from a, you know, learning broadcast journalism the way anybody normally would. But I think what he saw in me was, yeah, I was comfortable in front of a camera. I certainly knew hockey. And what helped was I knew everyone in hockey, either through my time at the Hall of Fame, where I'm dealing with every NHL team, let alone the NHL. I remember giving Gary Bettman his first tour of the Hockey Hall of Fame shortly after he was named commissioner of the NHL in 1993. I gave Wayne Gretzky his first tour of the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
You kind of get to know everybody in the game. And through my upbringing, you know, with two hockey playing brothers, one in the NHL for 10 years, I had a real understanding of what their lives were like. You know, I knew what it took to get there. I knew what it was like for the guys on a game day. So it was a crash course, though, in, oh, how do we need to set up for this interview? And then in an edit suite, how do you ever go, you know, I did a 20-minute interview that I have to get down to a 3.5-minute piece. You know, all the things that you would learn if you took broadcast journalism, I was sort of learning on the fly, and that was not easy.
Right, but you knew the stuff. I mean, but you also knew the stuff you can't learn in school.
That's true. And where a lot of women now will know it, either, you know, from being around the game themselves. Obviously, there's so many former players now that have gone on to be broadcasters. And they, you know, obviously some former colleagues of ours, from Cassie Campbell-Pathgill to Jen Botterill, Hall of Famer Jen Botterill, you know, for a lot of them, of course, they know the game. They played it. Well, I never played it, so I would never purport to be an analyst. But for my role, basically interviewing players, I did have a good understanding of what the game is to them. And I guess more than anything, what me as a viewer at home would like to hear from that player. And I know, and you probably feel the same, so many of my favorite interviews with hockey players are when we're talking about everything other than hockey.
Sure.
It's more, you know, their lives around the game, outside of the game, away from the rink. And those are often the stories that I feel resonate so much with fans, because you're watching a broadcast, you see how the player does. You've got a panel of analysts who are breaking down their game. But what you don't maybe know is something about them, about their upbringing, about something else that they're really interested in that might make you go, wow, I didn't know that about that person. So maybe I am a fan of this guy now. He seems kind of cool. I'm going to tune in and watch him.
And that has really become your forte, your niche. I think your ability to make people feel comfortable allows those stories to be told so fully.
I would like to think so. Thank you for
saying that. No, it's true. It's a gift.
Also, you know, the show that you co-hosted, Hometown Hockey, for all of those years, I always felt so fortunate to be able to do features for that show, because I think even more so than maybe a regular broadcast, that show was all about the human side. You know, it would be about you would be in the hometown, a small town, you know, in Alberta or Saskatchewan, where a player might have been from, and when you uncover something about that player that takes them back to a story that really tells you about them, I think that was where we both got to tell stories that I feel resonated with people from coast to coast, honestly, whether you were a hockey fan or not. And we were just fortunate that it was around a hockey broadcast, which meant we'd have lots of people watching, because obviously, you know, we got a lot of hockey fans in this country, let alone south of the border where you are now.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I want to know, you know, when you first started, I mean, when I first got into hockey a lot later than you, I remember being in a press room or being at the draft and looking around me and thinking, oh my God, like I could count the number of women on one hand. And I felt like an alien, right? I was like, no, like it just, people were looking at me weird. You, in 1998, when you're doing, you know, ringside reporting and women have not occupied that type of position, how did you feel? Did you have enough comfort because you had grown up in this arena and knew so many people from the Hall of Fame, like from all of your lives and jobs?
Yeah. And that's where I say every one of those jobs helped me with this job, that in theory, I should have been going, oh my God, what am I doing on live television? I'll never forget. I think probably one of my first, if not the first interview I remember doing live, they threw to me at Maple Leaf Gardens, and I was in the Zamboni entrance interviewing Daryl Sittler pregame. Obviously, icon, former captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, this is weird. I'm live on television, like trying to wrap my head around there could be, I don't know, a million or so people watching right now. So that was kind of weird and could make me nervous. But the fact that I'm talking to Daryl Sittler, who by that point, between my time around the Leafs and my time at the Hockey Hall of Fame, you just kind of get to know everyone in hockey. So again, I feel like it wasn't new for me, especially doing a game at Maple Leaf Gardens, where by that point I had been at every game there for the previous 3 years. In a weird way, for someone who never played the game, I still to this day say I am more comfortable around a rink than I am probably anywhere. Going back to my days as a rink rat with following my brothers to the jobs that I had that took me to NHL arenas, even before I was in broadcasting. So I guess I was aware of the fact that I was sometimes the only woman in the room, sometimes one of a handful. It didn't seem as foreign to me as I'm sure it would have for you or any other woman maybe first getting into it, into the industry, if you hadn't kind of been around it for the years that I had. So yes, that was definitely helpful to me. What also was helpful to me is social media didn't exist back then. I did not get the immediate feedback that I can only imagine what it would have been had I been hearing what I'm sure a lot of people were saying from their couches at home. What the heck is this woman doing on my TV screen? Right. If they were saying it, luckily I didn't get to hear it. So I wasn't so, I mean, not that I had blinders on, but you know, especially when you've got a job to do, like whether you're a beat reporter there every, you know, at morning skate, all you're looking at is, okay, I need to talk to him. So, okay, he looks like he's wrapping up his scrum. I need to get over there. Or post game. It's like, you know who you want to talk to. You know what you need to do. And when you've got a job to do, I mean, it's kind of like throwing you into the deep end of the pool. You just kind of have to figure it out or you're going to fail. And I was just, I think so, I felt so fortunate to be given an opportunity that honestly at that time, I guess, because I, again, hadn't taken this in school, part of me thought, I don't belong here.
Right.
So I had to work harder than anybody to prove that I did belong there. You know, God help you if you're a woman and mispronounce a hockey player's name. A guy could do it and they'll just figure, oh, you know, he just had a bad day or whatever, where a woman does it and it's like she doesn't know what she's talking about. So, you know, you just work that much harder to make sure that nobody is going to question whether you actually belong there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've had this conversation together many times. And, you know, I feel so fortunate that we met right when I started at Sportsnet and doing hometown hockey. You were our very first show is in London, Ontario. So you were on our very first broadcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I said at the beginning of the show, you had my back from day one and I certainly have yours. But you know, you've always been a champion for other women, which is, you know, I understand it's sometimes hard when you feel like, as Billie Jean King refers to it, as there's only the crumbs. We're all fighting for the same crumbs. In what ways, first of all, have you felt sort of the inequities, the sort of gendered inequities in the world that you live in?
Yeah, I mean, I do feel there certainly have been times where I will pitch a story, you know, in a boardroom, usually filled with all men, and somebody else gets the story. A male colleague ends up getting the story. And I'm thinking, okay, may not have been the most original idea, but it was mine that I brought to the table. Why is that person getting it? You know, or just the hierarchy of what teams you cover, what shows you're on, where your pieces run in a show, like all of those things that... I mean, it's tough because it is subjective, but when I feel, boy, I got a story from someone that nobody else has gotten, like you just want to feel, I guess, no matter what you do, you just want to feel like your work is appreciated and you want to feel like you are getting the opportunities you've worked hard to deserve to get. And so more than anything, I would say when others have been assigned roles and duties that I genuinely feel I am more, you know, prepared for and, you know, should have gotten the opportunity to do it. Those in power will make decisions for whatever reasons. And that's where, you know, I think after a while you do start speaking up for yourself because you realize, you know what? Well, I mean, the best/worst example was the Next Generation game that the Leafs did. I remember the first year that they had, it's called a Next Gen game where they would have young people shadowing different parts of the broadcast, you know, behind the bench, on the ice, little kids with players. So there was going to be a young girl shadowing the rinkside reporter for that game. And I remember a producer coming over and telling me that, hey, you know, this is the next gen game for the Leafs is coming up. And there's a young girl that we've chosen to shadow the rinkside reporter. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great. And yeah, she is like, you are her idol. She's so excited. She would really like to meet you. And I'm like, great, I'm going to be doing the game with her. And he goes, yeah. So my male colleague was going to be working with her doing that game.
I remember
being so shocked. Like, that producer walked away and I sat there in stunned disbelief for a few minutes saying, you made the point of telling me that a young girl, I think she was 14 at the time, a young girl who has grown up idolizing me, wants to be me, is going to be shadowing the rinkside reporter for that game. And you're not going to have she and I working together. Like, how could you miss that opportunity?
Right.
Of literally showing, you know, how role models can help younger people believe that they can do that job. So I do remember going back to that producer being so insulted and just saying, sorry, I just can't believe that you wouldn't have me do that game for all the reasons that you just described. And I will say this, I don't think it was malicious. I just don't think it dawned on them that this was a golden opportunity, the visual alone, let alone that young girl who I am still in a great relationship with. I'd like to feel that I've helped mentor her along the way, and she is in this industry now.
Yes.
So those are the opportunities that even when you have to fight for those, which kind of seem like a slam dunk no-brainer, but I think it is. It's just getting people to think a different way instead of, well, no, this is just always the way that it's been done, so we're going to continue to do it that way.
Well, and I remember, I believe the first time Hockey Night in Canada did anything very focused on International Women's Day, that was a fight that you championed, you know, and I think what ends up happening, as both you and I know, I mean, I think you reach a point in your career where you feel tenured enough. You feel like you know, you can use your voice.
Yeah.
You do start to see the inequity so flagrantly that you have to say something, but even with the tenure that both of you and I have had, you still end up being punished. You know, you're labeled a difficult woman. And, you know, it's just, I mean, and that is certainly not exclusive to the hockey world.
No, it isn't exclusive to a hockey arena, but you're right. You know, a male counterpart fighting for the same things is like, look at him. Like, he's working hard. He's going to go places because he goes that extra mile to make sure that it's done right. Where the same actions by a woman can often be deemed, oh, she's difficult. You know, she's not just going to go along with what we tell her to do. She's actually going to question things and fight for things. But I think you're absolutely right that for the early years of my career, it wouldn't have even dawned on me. I would quietly be frustrated if I felt like I got passed over for an opportunity that I felt I deserved to do. I was just kind of felt lucky to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, you know, you get older, you get bolder, and you kind of figure, if I don't speak up for myself, clearly nobody else at this male-dominated table is going to. But also, and that's where I started to see young women, like other women in the industry, which to me, I never saw as a competitive thing.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, some of the younger women that even got hired at Sportsnet, even before you were there, are my best friends. I was so happy to be surrounded. It's like, oh, I'm at the rink now, and there are other women that I can get to know, and we can help each other. So I kind of felt at a certain point in time, I had to use my voice in a bolder way, if not for myself, for the other women that came behind me. Because if I'm not getting those opportunities, then a younger generation isn't going to. You want to be the one that is seen, you know, on a Stanley Cup final or doing the big interview, because then it's so strange to say, but it normalizes people at home seeing women do these roles, which again, I'm just so proud that more and more women are involved in the game of hockey in every way and not just on mm-hmm. a broadcast. It used to be, you could kind of only be a rinkside reporter or maybe do interviews. I mean, now we have panelists, we have women in management of teams, we have women behind the bench.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do, which is so wonderful to see. And honestly, I feel like that just normalizes it. Or to hear a woman calling a game,
right,
that normalizes it instead of the jolt that that was for, you know, so many men at home watching a game. I mean, gosh, we were part of the first ever all-female broadcast of an NHL game on International Women's Day way back in Calgary when Cassie Campbell-Pascal, Leah Hextall, and I, let alone our female crew, were the first to actually in Canada broadcast an all-female game. And I'm sure that that was jolting for a lot of hockey fans and maybe some women too, kind of thinking, what is this?
Right.
But, you know, it's just not, all of us had been doing this job for a long time. It was now we were just put together, you know, for a special game on International Women's Day. I mean, I'm glad now that there isn't as much of a need to do that, to like showcase mm-hmm. it once a year. It's more, hey, who's on the crew this week? And maybe it's a few women, maybe it's a lot of women, you know, whatever it is, it's just normalizing. If you can do that job, then you are there to do the job.
Right. And I mean, I still think there's room for intentionality, you know, like I think what you're talking about, the next generation game, like that stuff can just, you know, it can go by the wayside, just not, like you said, not intentionally, but yeah. There has to be some awareness of, like, you know, making it the inclusive sport it can be, right?
Absolutely, for everybody. And so this, yeah, isn't just for us as women, but just including, you know, if you are any sports league, you want your fan base to be as broad and diverse as you can. And the numbers don't lie. That's how you get a bigger fan base, if you appeal to more people. So you're right. There is definitely still room for intentionality. There, I'm sure there always will be. I always say we've come a long way, baby, but we still have a ways to go. I don't think anyone can just make assumptions that, okay, everything's great now, you know? But I'm so buoyed by seeing so many women mm-hmm. around the game, of course. And I'm speaking of hockey just because that is my world. That's my arena. And I love that it looks a lot different than it did when I first began.
And even from when I first began too. So it's great. Not to dwell on some of the tough stuff, but I do want to ask you a question that I get asked a lot, and I kind of struggle with how to answer, but you know, hockey culture is a many faceted thing. You have seen absolutely the best of it. The you know, the brotherhood, sisterhood, the fraternity of it, the community of it, the way it lifts people up. But of course, you know, there are things that happen in hockey that are really problematic and troubling. For you, how do you reconcile it? Are there times where you feel dejected and just, you know, struggle to kind of want to remain part of it?
Yeah, I will say probably more than anything, there are those times, and we know because there have been headline stealing times in this game where I would say more than anything, I feel really sad and disappointed. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, this is a sport that I am so proud of, that I genuinely love, and I love being a part of it. But with that, you have to recognize the good and the bad. And the thing I would say, I do feel like in all walks of life, there is that too, maybe not proportionately the same.
Sure.
But I do think in society, like there are just shifts in society that we are seeing. And so those shifts hopefully are being reflected in our game when things that used to get hidden and swept under the rug just aren't anymore. And those are the painful times, not only for, you know, those who are victimized in whatever way that that might be within the game. But those are painful times for, again, for a sport that I love.
Mm-hmm.
But with every real disappointing story or heartbreaking story, again, I just hope that everybody learns something from it, and that we, and I just mean the collective we as a sport, don't keep making the same mistakes over and over again, and recognize that is not cool.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been the way things happened back in the day, but it isn't anymore. And again, I don't feel like it is perfectly unique to hockey, but there's no question that it has been a part of the hockey culture. And you and I know, because again, we've been part of organizations that whose sole reason is to change hockey culture.
Right.
And I'm just hopeful in a world where sometimes we can lose hope with all of the craziness that's going on in the world, but I do remain optimistic that things will get better with the right people in charge, mm-hmm. as well. Because it yeah. always starts at the top, whether that's a country, an organization, you know, mm-hmm. a company, whatever, a team, it really does start from the top. And I think even the hopefully more diversity that we're seeing at all levels, you know, because it really does start at the top, will help create a culture where more and more people are comfortable.
Mm-hmm. That's a great answer, Chris. And yeah, I mean, there's so many people doing great work. I think that for me, it just keeps me afloat, because there's so many people like you who are just, you know, who love the sport, and it's never a critique of the sport or the culture as a whole. It's, you know, it's because we love it and care. So
yeah.
Just a nugget for our Sharks fans out there. Do you have any particular memories of the Shark Tank? How much time have you spent there as a reporter?
Oh, I've done a number of games over the years there. But actually, what really sticks out is when the All-Star game was there. And honestly, off the top of my head, I can't even remember exactly what year that was. But that was the first time, like, I got to hear the roar of the crowd. And yeah, it's an All-Star game, but in the Shark Tank. And it was the Owen Nolan. Remember when he called his goal? Like,
yeah.
Coming in on goal, and like, I am going to, like, that was probably the first time that might have been the first time I was actually at a game in San Jose. But over the years, oh my gosh, I remember getting to meet James Hetfield of
Metallica.
We all know what a huge Sharks fan he is. But, you know, I always, well, the man that always brings a smile to my face that I'm sure does to every Sharks fan out there is Joe Thornton, who, of course, I just saw being at the Hall of Fame induction. His speech was so amazing. I was fortunate enough to do a number of interviews with Joe, not only as a ringside reporter, where it was just always so funny. He would always be shirtless, no matter what. He didn't have the Hockey Night in Canada towel to put around his neck, but he would always be geared down from the waist up. But the one story we did for Hometown Hockey, when we were in Joe's hometown of St. Thomas, and Steve Barber, who was his best friend growing up in St. Thomas, who had ALS. And I just remember reaching out, you know, to the Sharks to see if Joe would be open to helping us tell Steve Barber's story. And he was like, absolutely. And I know you will remember that. You'll remember that show in Joe's hometown. That was just one of the most, you know, heart-wrenching but heartwarming stories of, like, you talk about a friendship that goes through thick and thin, and it just sort of tells you everything. And I know there's so many stories like that with Joe, but it just tells you what kind of guy Joe Thornton is.
Yeah, I remember that very well, and remember being in St. Thomas with Steve Barber, who sadly passed, but yeah, just a lovely community there. And yes, yeah, seeing, and Joe's around, it's just so funny seeing him. Like, he's
never changes, does he?
He, like, never changes.
Big kid,
yes.
As he was at his induction. It was, I just, you know, there's a guy that, talk about joy. Like, he just spreads joy wherever he goes. He just loves living life, you know? Doesn't take anything too seriously. Obviously worked hard at his craft, having an incredible Hall of Fame hockey career. But those are the people in the game that make me really proud and excited to be here.
So, Chris, as we come to our conclusion here, I have to ask you about your new gig. So excited that we get to see you on our screens doing what you do best. So, fill us in on the new Prime Monday Nights.
I am a part of the Prime Monday Night Hockey crew. I was brought on board this season as their features reporter. So, as you said, I am back doing what I love to do the most and just so grateful to Prime that they believe in storytelling as well, that is a part of their broadcast that they wanted to add. So it's been fun pitching story ideas based on their matchups every Monday night. Already shot a few in the can that will be coming out in the next few weeks and more to come in the new year. But I got to say, it's really exciting to be back out there and part of a whole new streaming service. I mean, I talk about how the game has changed when I first started at Sportsnet in 1998 to where we are now. And I'm just happy to still be able to contribute in a way that Prime seems to be happy with and hopefully our viewers are too.
Well, you are, as always, a pleasure and one of the very best. And I'm proud to call you my friend.
Well, right back at you. And thank you so much for inviting me to be on your podcast. This is a treat.
What a joy. Christine, thank you so much for your time. Such a pleasure to spend time with you, no matter what the context is. But always lovely to hear your story. And I know how much you inspire me and inspire all the people around you. And you really are truly one of the best in the business. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode of The Undercurrent. In the meantime, keep your sticks on the ice and your fins above water.